Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We're taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We're discussing the Preds. Some interesting comments from David Poile on our show yesterday, and taking your thoughts on the Preds and their path forward from here. As I often do, Joe, our friends at MoneyPuck.com with their playoff percentages, Preds at 17.2% after play last night, 17.2%.
Okay, not great.
So that's going down.
I'm going to throw Craig's comment in here. We've tried to be a gritty, tough team to play against for years. I think he means while you do need some of that, why doesn't our coach or GM think, man, all these other teams skate fast and score goals, that seems to work for them? It's funny because, I mean, I think it's pretty clear David Poile was – very much trying to build a fast, fluid, offensively, skilled team. And I think that really was – I mean, the best Preds teams, those two teams in particular, 17 and 18, I mean, they certainly had some grit too. But for the most part, I mean, they had speed. They had guys like Arvidsson flying around and Ryan Ellis, an undersized defenseman. And I feel like that was more – that kind of approach, and that this has been a change because they were getting their butts kicked. I think in particular because they got their butts kicked by Dallas in the first round of 2019.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a style shift. I mean, I would say, I mean, you really need both, right? Like that's what everybody's searching for, right?
Nobody exactly. Like these teams that are, I mean, look at these teams that are very successful. They have some bruisers too.
Right. Like, you know, Colorado last year, yes, they have McCarr and they have McKinnon and Landeskog, all these different guys that are Rantanen that are really skilled. That's great. I mean, that's the main reason why they were where they were. No, there's no question about it. Number one, you're talking about elite guys there. And number two, like, I mean, let's Nichushkin, big guy last year. You can get a bit physical on you. Landeskog, physical player. On the back end, they went and got Manson, who's a brute back there. I mean, you need both. Like, you need the balance of being able to skate, make quick plays, and being able to play that kind of messier style game. Look, if it was just about speed and skill, then Edmonton would have four Stanley Cups by now.
Right, right. I mean, back then, the Preds were like, ah, Cody McLeod, come on, man, we need you. You know, I mean, trying to find, you know, something like that to stop picking on our stars, you know? But I mean, look, obviously, you're watching this team right now struggling to make – I understand the thought. I do.
Sure.
I mean, they're struggling to score.
Well, and let me be clear. The Predators do not have enough speed and do not have enough skill. There's no question about that.
Right. So, on Twitter, this is where – okay, so this is Be The Best, at Don't Whine One.
Okay.
There's a reason players aren't playing to the potential. They either don't like each other or they aren't buying what the coach is selling. GM's job to figure it out. My take, the players have a better track record than the coach. I think we're searching for reasons. The GM's job is to build a better team. I don't know if there's anything he's going to figure out right now. And again, they had the meeting. They felt like the meeting helped them. They did play well for a few games after the meeting. Now they've had some poor performances after the meeting. I think you're searching for reasons where it's a lot more simple than that. They're not good enough. They are a fringe team. You think these guys are better than John Hines. I'm not going to go play.
You've got the wrong guys.
Yeah. And as far as liking each other, I don't know. I don't think that's a thing.
I don't think it's a thing either. Like, do they get along all the time? I'm sure they don't. I mean, look, everybody's searching for reasons. I get it. I'll put it to you this way. Like, if you think the Predators' only problem right now is the head coach, and if they fire him, everything's just going to be hunky-dory moving forward, and they're going to be back to competing for playoff series and back in the Stanley Cup run, I can't get there. Like, the team is not good enough. Now, I'll also say this. If they miss the playoffs this year, then the case to retain John Hines moving forward, I think, starts to get pretty hard to make. Like, this should be a playoff team. And if it's not going to be a playoff team, like, honestly, if this team misses the playoffs, you got to start thinking about everything that we've been talking about if you're the Predators. Be that the coach, be that selling off some pieces, tearing things down to some degree. Like, I think you got to think about all of it if you're the Predators. Because if you don't, like, I just don't see a scenario right now, outside of you getting incredibly lucky in the draft lottery and landing Connor Bedard, which last time I checked, they had a 2% chance of that. I mean, it's not going to be easy to get your way out of it moving forward and be any different than where you're at right now, which is on the bubble at best, and at worst, slightly on the bubble and missing the playoffs.
Yeah. Now, Jared has brought up the point. Other people have brought up the point. There's been examples of a coach firing and then a team takes off. You know, St. Louis, we've seen this before, you know.
It's happened a couple times with Pittsburgh, but they had Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin.
So, I don't, like, I guess, I don't know. Who knows? Maybe it was just that in those situations, the coach lost the room and they couldn't stand playing for him, and then they, or whatever. It's like just a kick in the pants, like, hey, you know, we're serious, you know, whatever. You change the room. That was the whole idea. You know, firing Laviolette back in early 2020. But I think Poyle has made it like, so Jared's whole thing is that's their last move. Do that, maybe you see if you get a bump from it. But I think Poyle's made it pretty clear that's not happening in season. And at this point, mid-February, like, how often has that happened in this league where you'd have a firing this late in the year when you're close to the deadline and you're trying to make a playoff push?
Yeah. I mean, it's a great point.
Yeah. So I think you just drop that as a possibility. I'm with – look, if they don't make the playoffs this year, then absolutely everything should be up for examination and potential change.
Got a text that says the Preds problem starts with ownership and trickles down through the players. The entire thing is bad and it isn't going to work. Look, I don't know much about how the Predators ownership group operates. The fact is we just don't talk to them a whole lot. We talked to Herb Fritch this past summer for, I think, the first time I can remember talking to Herb Fritch was this past summer. And he talked about David Poyle. And at that time he had complete trust in David Poyle and faith in David Poyle. And we've discussed that here on the show. Like, I do wonder, with Haslam coming in, when that transition taking place over the next couple of years, how does that affect the decisions that they make moving forward? Like, if they don't make the – it's been pretty clear that making the playoffs is important to them. It's important financially. Like, it's obviously something they want to do. If they don't make it this year, how does ownership view that, and what is their response to it? That's a question that I have no idea what the answer is to.
No, but based on what Herb Fritch said a year ago, I have my doubts that they'll do anything dramatic. I have my doubts that they'll fire anybody.
I think it's fair. I mean, I think it's fair for you to feel that way. I don't know if that's the fair way to do it. I'm just saying it's fair for you to feel that way.
It is very different than most professional sports franchises.
It is, and you know it. If you're the Predators right now, I mean, look, they're 17.2%. They're still, when you look at the standings, you know, you're not that far out of it. But there's been nothing to me that suggests so far this year that the Predators can string together anything long enough that I think it's going to take to get in the playoffs. Like, it's going to take you winning. You know, Willie was breaking it down yesterday. They've got 31 games left. You're going to have to win probably 18, 19 of those, and then maybe throw in a couple overtime shootout losses in there. Based on what I've seen from this team so far, like, I just don't know if they can do it. I don't know if they can do it. And the problem is you got to make a decision long before that. Like, the 31 games is one thing. You got 8 games left until the deadline. Like, you got to make a decision before then.
Yeah. I think I took Poyle's answer yesterday as kind of what we were talking about before we talked to him, which is they're probably not doing much. Right? I to me, they would have to really hit the skids here for him to consider a major piece going out, I think. But
is that the right approach?
Well, I don't. Like, I'm not saying it is, but that's just what I'm. I think if you can, like, we've gone through it. Niederreiter? I mean, maybe McDonough, Ekholm, if somebody out there is like really like, I want this guy to be a core, you know, top four guy for us. You know, maybe that's possible. But there aren't that many. I don't think there's going to be that many possibilities anyway. Real quick on Nate. I don't buy getting the playoffs making you absolvent from being considered mediocre. Squeaking the playoffs, barely missing, is mediocre to me, and that's fine. But there's still – that's still like – it's like if you don't, right? I mean, we can all agree that's still – now finally it's like, okay, it's not working.
Right.
If you do, I think a lot of people are still like, especially if you do and you get smoked in the first round.
Right.
If you do, then sorrow steals you a series. And, you know, some people right now who aren't saying much are like, see, I told you, you should root for the Preds.
Well, I will say, like, there's one part of this that I hear a lot that I don't know that I have a ton of time for. It's like, well, if the Predators didn't have Soros, where would they be? It's like, well, they do have Soros.
Yeah.
So
a goalie is part of your team.
Yeah. I mean,
if the Chiefs didn't have Mahomes, right, like, I tell you what.
I understand what you're saying.
What would they be?
Like, how good is the – like, how many times has UC Soros saved their bacon? Like, I get it.
That's why you won a great goalie.
That's why you're paying him what you're paying him, and he's a top three goalie in the league. I mean, that's part of what you have to factor in.
Speaking of trade assets.
There is that. 615-737-1025. We'll continue to take your thoughts on our phone and text lines. We'll get to a couple more Preds thoughts. Also get into the hiring of Shane Steichen as head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. What's the challenge look like for him? And how formidable could the Colts be as they move forward? We'll get into all that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook. We are live from our 1025 The Game studios, brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. I think we've just discovered the plan for the Predators moving forward. I think I just came up with it.
Nice.
Just
I love it.
Tinker around with a roster. I'll let things expire, leave some money open, start to build some complimentary pieces, and then the summer of 2026, when Connor McDavid's a free agent, just go after him. There you go. Figured it out.
Let's see. At that point, it's a great plan. The cap may go up a decent amount by then. So if you can basically
$16 million a year,
just basically bring Milwaukee here, and yeah, I was gonna say, like, can you get him $20 million a year, something like
maybe
that?
So.
Yeah. So I like it. Yeah. As we see, Connor McDavid means Stanley Cups.
Yeah. It's really worked out well so far, although he's pretty darn good.
That's the thing. Like, if you're an Oilers fan, and, you know, I mean, for years now, they've been – and I know they had the run. So they've had one run, so that does change things. But it's like, you know, it's like, how can you build around him? Why can't – you know, why – when you have him, you have two of the greatest players in the world, how is that not working out for you? But it's still fun to watch, right?
Oh, yeah.
I feel like it's like – just because of the entertainment level of your team, that there's probably less angst than, say, here.
Yes, I would say so. 615-737-1025. We'll get back into the Preds coming up a little bit later in the show. Shane Steichen introduced as the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. Jim Irsay in his nice blue suit and his charming smile got up on that stage yesterday along with Chris Ballard. They were joking around, high-fiving, laughing all over the place. It's all's good in the world of the Indianapolis Colts. What do you make of, now that we've finally gotten through the end of that coaching search, you know, Jeff Saturday came out with a nice, classy video from what looked like his boat yesterday in the middle of the water somewhere, thanking the city of Indianapolis and the Colts for the opportunity. Now that we're through it and Shane Steichen is the head coach, what do you make of the job that he's about to take on, the challenge that's in front of him, and where exactly the Colts are now and what their trajectory is as you start to look at the AFC South over the next couple of years?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't, you know, these hires like this, sometimes they work out great and sometimes they don't. This is the offensive whiz from the team of the flavor of the, you know, of the moment hire that happens all the time in the NFL. And you've seen it work out pretty well with, you know, I mean, the Shanahan McVay people have fanned out over the league. There's some success stories there. We've talked about Matt Nagy, you know, there's an Andy Reid guy who, you know, didn't succeed, although he did. What, did he win Coach of the Year? I mean, did he win NFL Coach of the Year? Maybe not. Matt Nagy?
I think he did. Yeah,
I think he
did. Yes, he did. He did.
But that was also, you know, that was because the Bears had an incredible defense, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, he went there to do, he didn't get done. I mean, Sirianni has obviously worked out. You know, we've seen, I need a full score sheet. I mean, you know, some have worked out, some haven't. Guys like Josh McDaniels with the Patriots have very much not worked out, yep. You know.
Nathaniel Hackett did not work out.
Nathaniel Hackett did not work out. No. Doesn't know how to.
Didn't give him enough time.
Keep time. You know, Zach Taylor has worked out with the Bengals. The offensive coach is overwhelmingly the choice these days in the NFL. I mean, look, if I'm a Colts fan, I'm hopeful. And I'm a lot more excited about this than if they had hired Jeff Saturday, for sure. But as a Titans fan looking at the Colts, I mean, we'll see. And he wasn't like what I saw the presser. It doesn't mean much, but it wasn't all that great. Again, we thought Sirianni had one of the worst pressers ever, and he just played in the Super Bowl. So who knows?
Adam Gase staring around.
Now that was an amazing one.
Yeah, it was. Yes, it was. They're at an interesting spot because, you know, we joke about it now, but we talked about it heading into the season. I mean, their roster, you had some players that we felt like were still pretty good and gave you a chance to compete in the AFC South. And, you know, obviously Matt Ryan didn't work out, and they're going to have to go find another quarterback. Probably going to be in the draft where they find their quarterback. So without knowing exactly who that's going to be, it's hard to forecast who the Colts are and what they're going to be as they move forward here. So that's going to be the main thing that they've got to figure out. But, I mean, you do still have Jonathan Taylor. You do still have Shaq Leonard. I mean, you got a lot of good pieces on both sides of the ball that, you know, are pretty good players. Michael Pittman Jr. Like, how far are they a quarterback away? Like, if they could find a good young quarterback and here in the next year or two, can they be right back in there and competing for the AFC South and back in there in a playoff spot? I mean, that's the goal. I mean, I think that's what they want to be. How difficult is that going to be to accomplish for them? I'm not sure. I mean, the main thing that they have to figure out beyond the quarterback position is similar to the Titans. Like, they've invested all this money in their offensive line, and it just hasn't really been all that good the last couple of years. And if you can't fix that, especially with a younger quarterback coming in, you're going to have a hard time next year.
Yeah. Big quote from him, of course, asked about his, you know, offensive side, quote, "We're going to pass to score points and run to win games."
Yeah.
So that was interesting. But, no, hopefully he does understand the value of Jonathan Taylor. Did you see the most glowing endorsement of Shane Steichen? Did you see where it came from?
I did not.
I would say that absolutely the strongest comments I saw about this hire were from one Philip Rivers, who is a huge Steichen. So I say I don't know. Does he have some more kids on the way? What's he doing?
Back in there?
Yeah,
maybe he's
going to
join the coaching staff.
Maybe.
That's true. That's a lot less fun than him coming back as quarterback, but yes. But in all seriousness, he's one thing that in reading about this, and I'm reading Bob Kravitz's piece, you know, Reich, the thing, what he points out, there's a lot about, like, his background is like basically it's like they hired Frank Reich again, you know, kind of
is.
You know,
yeah.
It's very similar analytics and a lot of the background, everything
came for the Eagles.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's some definite, but one thing that they hope is that he's better at holding people accountable. And apparently that was something that, you know, Reich fell short in. And that was some of the talk around Saturday when he got in there, is that actually got better with Saturday. Than it was. I mean, Reich does seem like a really nice guy. Sometimes really nice guys, you know, they struggle with that. So,
hey, he's still a head coach.
He is.
Nice guys, soft players.
What's that?
Nice guys, soft players.
Yeah. Is that a quote?
No, remember the tweet you sent Ravi and I?
Yeah.
Rick Barnes was being nice.
Yeah. Leads to a bunch of softness out there.
Oh, gotcha, right. Oh, that's because of Rick Barnes, like, congratulated Stackhouse. Yeah. Yes, this is why the Vols are soft. Yeah.
Schefter put this tweet out. Michelle sent this over a few minutes ago. Schefter put this tweet out like 30 minutes ago. Says, "It's not the first time and likely won't be the last. Carolina and Indianapolis discuss prominent offensive coaching roles with ESPN analyst Dan Orlovsky before he opted to remain at the network." This is from Adam Schefter.
Interesting. Okay.
So apparently Carolina and Indianapolis discussed prominent offensive coaching roles with Dan Orlovsky.
Like, Dan, can we all agree that the end zone is not 15 yards
right.
deep? It's only 10.
Well, my question is, like, from the Colts' point of view, was that like Ursay being like, hey, if I hire Jeff Saturday, you want to come be the offensive coordinator? I don't know.
Could be.
What a duo that would be. We'd have fun with that.
Unstoppable. With Levis? Oh, my gosh. Juggernaut.
And J-Rob, the new GM.
The next dynasty. Right. There you go.
615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, a big game tonight in Tennessee out in Knoxville. A top 10 matchup. Tennessee hosting the number one Alabama Crimson Tide tonight on the hardwood. We'll get into that matchup coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Robbie Stantley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezvik, who is very proud of herself right now, playing this song.
This came on shuffle while Ryan and I were cooking last night, and wow, the full body excitement that I got. I mean, yeah, it's just, I'm so excited.
You're going to make Robbie not want to talk college basketball, though, if you start these with this. You know what I mean?
Now, kid you put not, him in a, though, this in a sour song mood. Came on. This song came on. I was watching NC State Syracuse great game last night, and I just so excited.
Well, glad you are. I fully recognize I may be the only human being on the earth that doesn't like that song, so it's all good.
I mean, I'll be honest here. I like it when it's played. I wouldn't want to listen to it a lot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, you know, it's like the right moment. It's great, right?
Yes, sure. I agree. Like, remember the Mets song they used for?
Oh yes,
which is now used by everybody.
Yeah, it was great, and then it got overplayed. But I feel like this song, nobody has decided to ruin it, so that's why it's still great. But I'm not going to listen to it on shuffle. Okay. Right. You know.
But you will start.
But apparently, she did last night.
I will. Yeah, it just came on, you know.
Yeah, okay. All right. I got some tickets to give away. A pair of tickets to see the Dave Matthews Band at Bridgestone Arena coming up on May 26th. Be caller number 5, 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Caller number 5 will win a pair of tickets to see Dave Matthews Band at Bridgestone Arena coming up on May 26th. Joe is going to dial on his phone right now. You're not eligible, Rex Road.
Oh, sorry. I'll be in the building. Don't worry.
All right.
If you get in, Dave. You'll see me flailing around somewhere.
I do like Dave Matthews.
Hey, who doesn't?
Good.
All right, Tennessee taking on Alabama tonight, hosting the Crimson Tide. Not been a great couple of weeks or week and a half for Tennessee at this point. You lose to Vanderbilt on a buzzer beater. Before that, you'd lost to Florida, and then you lost to Missouri on a buzzer beater as well. And now you have the number one team in America coming into your building tonight. And they've been playing really well, Alabama has, of late. So, Joe, obviously, this is a big one tonight in the college basketball landscape. I'm looking forward to watching it. I will be watching it. That's probably not good news for Tennessee. So we'll see what happens on that front. What do you make of this matchup with Tennessee reeling a bit right now, hosting the red-hot Alabama Crimson Tide tonight?
Who put in the grid? Tennessee is a three-point favorite. What does Vegas know? You put that in there? I'm not surprised by that. I'm not surprised. But I mean, college basketball, home. And look, it's not great for Bama. I mean, it's great for Bama to be number one. Hey, love it. Embrace it. It's been 20 years. But timing-wise, I don't know that I'd be super thrilled with getting that one next to my name right before this game. Because in my opinion, that puts a little bit more pressure on them. Because we know how often number one loses on the road in a conference play against a good team. And also, it maybe gives the Vols a little bit extra juice, but they'll have plenty. And my question tonight is, Josiah James, is he going to play? And Julian Phillips, is he going to play? Neither of them, according to Rick Barnes Monday, were going to practice that day, and they're both supposed to be game-time decisions today. Boy, they could certainly use one of those guys at least.
No question about it. And if you don't have it, all of a sudden you're behind the eight ball on that front. And a question I have is – you know, and we had Mike Wilson on Monday, and he talked a little bit about it. You know, the last couple of times out, the defense against the three hasn't been great. We talked about Missouri. I mean, they just shot the lights out the other day. Made 14 threes. I think, what was the number? 53.8%, something like that from three.
Yeah, 14 for 26 is just, you're not going to beat that team.
What they did. So, can you, if you're Tennessee, can you limit that with Alabama tonight? From them shooting the three, do you look a little bit better, more like the team you've looked like defensively all year long? I mean, to me, offensively, the team just kind of is what it is. Like, there will be nights where they look good offensively, and there will be nights where it doesn't look very good offensively for Tennessee. I don't know how much that's really going to change at this point. Defensively, when you have those bad nights offensively, is what I think can save you from a loss in, like, the round of 32 when something like that happens. Obviously, you want to put the whole thing together, and then we've seen them do that a couple of times this year. But defensively, can Tennessee get back to being the historically dominant level defense that we've seen for the most part this year?
Well, I don't think that they'll get back to that level until Josiah is healthy. And even if he goes tonight, I mean, anybody who watched him turn that ankle last week at Vanderbilt, he's not going to be – I mean, I could make a case to just let him get good and then come back. He's a huge part of them being great on defense, no doubt. And he'd be the guy, although you have to switch so much against Alabama, and that's what they will do, but – he'd be the guy that would be the primary defender on Brandon Miller if he were able to go tonight. So if they're going to win this game, yeah, they have to play really well defensively. They have to be you can't let the first guy blow past you and get into rotation, which did happen too much against Missouri, and Alabama will kill you. That's what they do. Nate Oates is, we're going to the rim, and we're shooting threes.
Yep.
We do not take mid-range jump shots, which I'm not a huge fan of, but it works out okay. What's that?
Hate him.
You hate Nate Oates?
No, mid-range jump shots.
Oh, you hate mid-range jump shots. Okay.
I mean,
no, but hey, he's obviously a good coach. And Brandon Miller, Mid-State's own, my gosh, is he a talent. So I watched their game at Auburn the other day. Auburn was jacked up at Auburn. It's a talented team. It was a great game, but I was really impressed with Alabama. Like, Alabama is right now trending as a one seed. They are very good. So if the Vols can figure this out tonight, it's a huge win for them. To me, it puts them right back in the two seed discussion, which would be a huge deal. Also, they're going to have to shoot the heck out of the basketball.
Yeah.
They have to play good defense, but they are not winning this game if they don't get into the 70s. I'm confident in that. Alabama's too good to just hold down. So whoever's out there, Ziegler, Vescovi, I mean, they've got to shoot. And Kamwa, to me, has got to be a huge part of this game. He's a big key tonight. He's got to have one of those nights where he gets in a rhythm, hits some jumpers, but also is driving, facing up, posting. He's got to be a big part of a win.
Well, and you need all three of those guys that we'll see if James could play. But you need especially Vescovi and you need Ziegler to be on shooting tonight. Like, I agree with you. They need to go inside more than they have on a consistent basis all year long. But against a team like this, you're also going to have Vescovi and Ziegler making big plays and shooting the ball efficiently. If they're not shooting efficiently in this game, you're going to be behind the eight ball against Alabama.
Yeah. Yeah. And turning it over to the Vols, some of their offensive issues at times are just sloppy turnovers. I mean, Rick Barnes, like, some coaches are just stronger at some things than others. Rick Barnes, actually, he and Tom Izzo are kind of similar in some ways, really good defensive coaches, and they run a lot of good stuff, but their teams have turnovers.
Yep.
And it's kind of like a chronic problem. When the Vols have those turnovers in bunches, it really – and Bama will put it on your head if you give them run out. So it's just so much on Ziegler. It's too bad there just isn't another point guard on this roster, because Ziegler has the world on his shoulders, on his, 5'7" frame out there. He's a heck of a player, but he's going to have to be special tonight. And lately, I feel like he's been wearing down.
If they win this game, how does it change the conversation around this team right now? It's one game. It'd be one win at home, but you're taking down the number one team in the country if you can do it.
Well, I think some Vol Twitter who's like, I'm done with this team or whatever, I think it would calm down some of the angst It's been massive ups and downs with this team. It wasn't long ago. It's like, wow, this is a – they blow out Texas. I mean, that was a blowout.
Yep.
That's like, oh, this is a national title contender. I still think that based on their wins this year and who they have, they could be. But, yeah, you need a win like this, I think, to turn things around. They have a – I mean, they've got this. They're at Texas A&M and they're at Kentucky.
Yep.
And I know Kentucky's not great, but it's still at Kentucky. I mean – this stretch could get them back in the one seed discussion. Seriously, you beat Alabama and then go win those two games on the road, your resume is as good as anyone's. But also, this could put them the other way. Also, we're talking about a 4 or 5 seed.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? It's a huge game.
Gigantic stretch coming up for Tennessee. By the way, don't look now. Vanderbilt wins again last night, 75-64. I get it. It's South Carolina, and South Carolina's not any good. But you're going on the road. You get another win. Liam Robbins, 24 points, 8 rebounds last night. Vanderbilt seems like they've figured some things out, and they got a lot of momentum right now.
It's the longest four-game winning streak in the conference, longest since Bryce Drew's first year, which was the last NCAA bid, which was started by a win over Tennessee, et cetera, et cetera. Still a long way to go for that, but – Ezra Manyon at point guard, go back and watch Vanderbilt in the first month of the season. My gosh, I was like, I don't get it. I don't. He might be the best point guard in the SEC right now, the way he's playing. And he's not a shooter. But the way he and Robbins right now, the two-man game, is devastating. They were up 20, you know, plus last night. And, yeah, South Carolina's not great. But that's a impressive win. I'm really interested Saturday night to see what Memorial Gym is like. Because if they beat Auburn Saturday night at home, you start talking about this team a little bit. Like, it's still a long shot, but, I mean, you could see where they could be on an absolute tear.
Here, too, to the SEC tournament.
Right. A tear coming into the SEC tournament. So, they are a lot of fun to watch right now, and it's getting interesting.
Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. We'll do that next. This is Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
The driving cat, the cat who could drive a car.
And it is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. Jared, I called you Jared.
Oh, boy.
You going to be okay over there?
Freudian slip.
It was a Freudian slip. Joe, with the music in the background and now with a hint of where we're going with this, I turn things over to you.
Well, you sort of, I guess you sort of previewed it. I mean, I guess this is sort of getting warmed up since Mark reminded me that that I have to argue with Jared today on Jared versus Joe at 5 o'clock. I heard of this, so I actually didn't listen at the time, but someone mentioned it to me, and this is Jared the other day, about P.K. Subban, the day, and this is something I was going to talk about yesterday, but I paused it a day. So this is Jared, I guess, complaining that the Preds were honoring P.K. Subban.
Okay, so tonight is P.K. Subban night here at Bridgestone Arena as the Predators are taking on the Arizona Coyotes. And I got a handful of Preds thoughts. I'm going to get off a little potpourri here, but I want to start with this. Was P.K. Subban really a good enough Predator to get a night? Like, P.K. Subban night? And is that what that is tonight, Ian? Is this like the full-on P.K. Subban night? Or is this just like before the game, it's like, please welcome P.K., and they show him in a box and he waves his hand? Or is he like getting the microphone and, you know, thank you, Nashville, for everything
like he did with Montreal
ever...
the other night a couple weeks ago? I'm not really sure about the official details about all that. You know, P.K. loves a microphone.
I know, but he's not a good enough Predator to get his own night. He played here for 3 years. They ran him out of town after the third year. He had one good playoff run and one good season. His second season and his first playoff run, he was really good for the Predators. But that third year, they kicked him off the team at the end of the year. They were glad to get rid of him at the end of the year. They thought he had gotten lazy. That's 3 years. Like, and we're going to have PK Subban Knight? Really? Like, I remember last year when they had Pekka Rinne Knight. And I was like, yes, Pekka Rinne deserves a Knight. And they retired his jersey, which he deserved. And they honored him to the level that I thought was apropos of what he meant to the franchise. But we're having a Knight for PK Subban? Like, they're going to give him a microphone tonight. Thank you, fans, for the 100 games that I played as a Predator.
I'm not sure.
Okay, so there's Jared. There's Jared's take. So here's what I would ask. Do they honor Michael Jordan at North Carolina? Because he was there for 3 years.
I would say they do.
Yes, I just compared Michael Jordan to North Carolina, PK Subban, and
yes,
the Preds.
Yes, you did.
I'm let me continue.
That'll be a segment.
Do they honor Magic Johnson at Michigan State? Yeah, there's a statue of him. 2 years. How about Anthony Davis? They like him at Kentucky? That was a year. Peyton Manning with the Broncos. 4 years. Could barely grip a football for one of those. Do the Broncos, would they give him a day, you think, the Broncos?
I think so.
I know that the Detroit Red Wings like Dominic Hasek a lot. He was there 4 years.
Yeah.
Two-year stints with one in Ottawa in between. They're pretty big fans of him. Would the Rams give Matthew Stafford a day? Because he had one good season there. How about Von Miller? Would Von Miller get a day? Would the Bucks give Tom Brady a day? You knew I was going to bring Tom Brady in.
I know you would.
He'd probably get a day, right? And you know what? I just mentioned people. I believe all of them won championships.
That is correct.
The Preds have not. So what have the Preds done? What's the best the Preds have ever done? It's getting to the Stanley Cup final. That's the best season they've ever had. PK Subban was completely central to that season, and specifically that run as a shutdown pairing with Matthias Ekholm. I mean, Jared did acknowledge that, so I give him credit for that. The next year, he was runner-up for the Norris for the best team in hockey, the President's Trophy winning cups. Those two seasons are absolutely far and away the two best seasons of franchise history. PK Subban was right in the center of it all. And PK Subban was not as good in the 2018-19 season. I don't know this lazy thing that Jared's talking about, but he wasn't as good. You know, he had, he missed games. He was hurt. He was actually hurt, you know, his first season some too. He missed 19 games in that season. And he was coming to an end. I mean, his career really was coming to an end. He was banged up player, and he didn't do a whole heck of a lot with the Devils, you know, in the next three seasons. So, yeah. I mean, it was a moment in time where the Preds brought in PK Subban, huge trade, Shea Weber, and I have no idea. They may have done exactly what they did with him with Shea Weber. I don't know. I'll never know. We'll never know. I do know what they did do with PK Subban and how important he was. And damn right he gets a Knight. Yes, he absolutely gets a Knight. I mean, let's go to like the Titans. Like, would you give, let's say like DeMarco Murray, okay, for example. Yeah. They didn't do anything special with him, but he was an important player for a brief period of time. I'm just thinking recent history. Like, if he came back, would he deserve like at least an ovation? What about like A.J. Brown? Probably, you know, people are mad at him now. But, you know, he was here a small period of time and did some pretty good things. I mean, I don't understand why you would complain about PK Subban getting a Knight with the Preds.
Well, I don't either. I think the Knight was fine. First off, I mean, now, to Jared's defense, this all happened. Those comments happened before the Knight actually happened. But, I mean, basically the Knight was PK Subban hanging out with the team
drop
a little bit, and he walked out there and did a puck drop. Yeah. So it wasn't like this was some long.
But let's say he did. Let's say he did give a speech.
It'd be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be fine. I mean, look, the guy, say what you will about PK Subban, the guy was critically important for that run, for the best stretch of hockey that the Predators have had, right? I was telling you this yesterday. I mean, I have watched almost every game that this team has ever played. I've watched a lot of Predators hockey over the years. And if I were putting together a starting 20, 18 skaters, two goalies, PK Subban's on that list. Now, he's not the top defenseman on that list. He's not the best player on that list. He's certainly not the most impactful Predator on that list, but he's on the list. Like he's in the conversation, in my opinion, in the best 18 skaters they've ever had. Now, I did hear Jared say the other day, like he started talking about like Martin Erat, like when's the Martin Erat night coming? Because he's got more points and was here longer than PK Subban. It's like, all right, man, come on.
Yeah. I mean, look, like obviously Pecorine is a different deal, of course.
Of course.
Pecorine is the greatest player in franchise history, and he has both longevity and greatness, and he was also central to that.
Correct.
Greatest. I mean, there's no comparison. I mean, if you want to rank things, there are some people who are going ahead of Subban, but Subban absolutely gets a night. I mean, come on.
Well, I still maintain I've seen a lot of really good defensive play here. I mean, Ryan Suter and Shea Weber, had they stayed together, may have been the best defensive pairing of all time. Like David Poile has talked about that many times. Like, you know, what could they have been if they stayed together? Because when they were together, they were pretty darn good. Suter and Weber together were pretty darn good. I still would contend that the best stretch of hockey I have ever seen a defense pairing have with the Predators is Ekholm and Subban in the run of the final. I mean they were unbelievable.
They had all the matchup. They had the matchup in every series, and they were incredible. Some other people bringing this up, JC, you know, his contribution charity wise in 3 years was unbelievable, and you know, eyes on the franchise too. And I think that's worth mentioning. You know, Rob from Clarksville, he was on the cover video game. You know, yeah, and like Blue Line Buddies. In a short period of time, he did a ton, man. He brought. But the biggest thing is that he was a great player for 2 years for the two greatest teams in Preds history.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's cool with a night now. I mean, look, is he going to, like, get his jersey retired? No. Nah. No one ever ever thought that. But, like, it's just I don't think there's anything wrong with recognizing PK Subban, bringing it back, having a night here, and now you just maintain a good relationship with him moving forward, and that's that.
And then Jared cries about it.
There is that. Maybe it comes up today in Jared versus Joe.
Maybe it will. I hope Caroline's on my side.
Mark has some stake on the line, so we'll see what happens on that front. This has been the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. Coming up next, we'll be joined by our friend Paul Kuharski from paulkuharski.com. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans and the offseason ahead. That's next. This is Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.